All right, so we got to the Gemara responds. Indeed, it would have been simpler to say that the time for the recitation of evening Shema begins with the emergence of the stars, but the particular expression used by the Tana teaches us another matter. In passing, when do priests partake of their Truma? From the time of the emergence of the stars. And the Tana teaches us a new halacha, parenthetically, failure to bring an atonement offering does not prevent a priest from eating Truma. Okay, so that was what you said, meaning you have this idea.
Explain that a little bit.
Okay, I will, of course. So the question is, if you want to tell me that the time for Shema is when the stars come out, just say, when do you read the Shema at night? When the stars come out. Oh, okay. So why does it tell us this? To teach us a secondary thing. We're going to learn two things now. First, we're going to learn the time for reading the Shema is when stars come out, but also we're going to learn that if a Kohen couldn't eat Truma because he was not in a state of proper, he was not pure, he had certain issues with that. It's a spiritual purity thing.
Right.
So you might have thought, let's say he became a, I think the example is a Mitzora, so he requires certain process of he's going through a process, and part of that process is that he has to bring a sacrifice. But we say that the sacrifice does not stand in the way, but rather he goes to the mikvah, and as soon as it becomes the end of the day and we go into the night, so that he actually at that point can eat his truma, he doesn't require the sacrifice in order to open up things, right? That's the idea of, so he's saying here, just read it again. When did the priest partake of the truma? From the time of the emergence of the stars. And the Tana is telling us, a new halacha, that failure to bring an atonement, meaning the offering, does not prevent the priest from eating truma. So in cases where an impure priest is required to immerse himself in the ritual bath and bring an atonement offering, even if he already immersed himself, he is not completely ritually pure until he brings the atonement offering. You still would have to, in order to finalize or complete the process of getting back to being pure, you'd also have to bring the atonement offering, a chatas. Nevertheless, he is still permitted to partake of the truma. Okay, so this is something that's a parenthetical. This is articulated fully in the Braita based on the close reading of the biblical passages, as it was taught in the Braita. With regard to the laws of ritual impurity, it is said, one who touches it remains impure even till evening. He should not eat of the consecrated items, and he must wash his flesh with water. And the sun sets, and it is purified. Afterwards, he may eat from the truma, for it is his bread. From the passage, and the sun sets, and it is purified, that the absence of the setting of the sun prevents him from partaking of truma, but failure to bring the atonement offering does not prevent him from partaking of truma, may be inferred. Meaning what? In plain words, it's the thing that need in order to allow him to start eating truma again. So let's just take a step back. What we're talking about is a Kohen, the priest. When a person brings his crops in from the field, at a certain point, when he crosses it into the house, that crop cannot be eaten from, you can't use it. It's not kosher, literally not kosher, mm-hmm. until you take off truma, which is about 2%. It goes to the Kohen. Meiser, 10%. That goes to the Levite, Levi. And then the Levite has to take off truma, Meiser. He takes a truma off, gives that to the Kohen. Levite gets a lot more, right? He's getting 10%. He gives a little bit off of his. He's giving, so there's 10, he gives off to that. At that point, when the Truma and the Meiser, and then there's also Meiser Ani, Meiser Sheni, depending on the year, when all those tithes are taken off, then the rest of the thing is permissible. Now, the Truma that was taken off to give into the Kohen, the Kohen has to have a certain level of purity in order to partake of the Truma. That's why it's talking here that he had become impure somehow. He was exposed to something that would make him impure. He needs to go through this purification process. And here we're learning this new thing that it's the setting of the sun and the beginning of nightfall that at that point when night comes in and he's gone to the mikveh during the day, we call it Harav Shemesh, when the night kicks in, at that point he can eat the truma. The fact that he has to bring an additional sacrifice of atonement, that doesn't prevent him. But now he's crossed into the world of purification. Now he can partake of truma. So just as a side here, it's important that we see that at the time of when there was a temple, there were laws of purity, of spiritual purity that were that they conducted themselves with. We have today like vestiges of that. So like the idea that we wash our hands before eating bread is a vestige of eating things on a level of certain purity. Okay, so that whole idea of washing hands is a
ritualistic.
But it derives itself from that period of time when we, like for example, today, I'm going to a funeral. As a Kohen, I'm not going to be able to go into the funeral parlor because of...
Oh, you can't even go to a funeral parlor in the cemetery at all.
So how does it work? So a Kohen can't be exposed to a dead body. A dead body inside a structure, we call it ohel. Ohel is a tent. But in halachic terms, what it means is that if you have a closed structure that has a covering and the body's inside that, under the covering, then the whole covering, that whole place makes you impure.
Okay, it's so exposed you can't go into a quote-unquote funeral home.
Correct. If the body's present. Now there is, this gets interesting. So what about, is it only a Jewish body, dead body, or is it, could it be a non-Jew? That ohel would apply, meaning all dead bodies, a Kohen can't touch, can't stand over, right? You can't be exposed to that. Does the ohel thing, the idea of a structure, being under that structure, does that apply to a non-Jew equally as it does to a Jew? Meaning, if a Kohen, let's say you go to a funeral home, the body is a dead body is a non-Jew, would ohel apply? Okay, so there are different sides. Now, practically speaking, when would this matter? So, for example, Museum of Natural History.
Oh.
Ripley's Believe It or Not. Okay, so those are, right? So if you know that there's a skull, that's a problem. Can't go into Ripley's. Okay? If there's a structure that there's ways of creating structures that would, that there are halachic ways of creating separations that would, how do you say it? Like, it's not a limit. It would be, it would, in a certain confine it. You can, there's some ways of confining the spiritual, because what we see is that basically the dead body, that, call it the tumah, the impurity, it actually can go up all the way to the sky. Like if there's nothing covering it, just goes straight up. So that sounds crazy, but it could bring us to a situation where you're flying on an airplane over a cemetery in Israel, that could be a problem for the Kohen. So how like the planes take off out of Tel Aviv and which they're
passed, really?
Then I don't know there are guys who've written about if it's an issue or not. Then there's a whole issue of whether or not you can be on a plane with the body on it, right? So let's say, for example, the LL flights out of JFK have bodies on them. So certain Kohanim, people will be careful. A Kohen won't fly out of JFK. He'll only fly out of Newark, because they don't usually carry the bodies on that. That's a whole...
I got a little bit of a crazy question. I don't want to take this to left field. A doctor,
mm-hmm.
to become a doctor,
yes.
has to work with dead bodies.
Right. So my father, who was a doctor, my brother...
And they're Kohens.
Yes. So they went... My father actually went to the chief rabbi of Israel, Herzog, and he asked him this question when he was like 15. And he got a response basically saying he had a dispensation basically allowing him to do it. And he had a whole very intricate like explanation as to why it would be okay.
My guess is it boils down to the fact that becoming a doctor, you're saving lives.
Yeah, but it's more involved. It's more very involved. I've read it. I don't necessarily understand. Like, it's complicated because there are different things that are being addressed in it. But he had, based on a certain approach, what was interesting, my father lost the letter, went back to the archives, and the archivist said that there was someone broke in and had actually removed and destroyed certain of his things, letters that he'd written out with this. And this one case was unique. He remembered it because it was very rare for Herzog to write these letters to be sent to people outside of Israel. He's usually like internal within Israel. This was one of those exceptions. But then years later, a friend of mine found a book where it had it inside. Letters. So we have it, yeah. So we have it. And it's like, it's trying to like understand. It's very intricate in terms of
the... But at the end of the day, a Kohen can be a
according doctor. To this, yeah. According to this, yeah. I mean, although the others' positions were that it... No.
Can't be.
Yeah. So it's...
And my guess is there's probably certain purification things you have to do.
Well, no. So the question is today. So now that there's no temple, and, you know, now that there's no temple... Even though we still are careful not to be exposed, right? There is an isser, there is a prohibition not to be exposed to a dead body. So there is something there. There are exceptions, right? What are the exceptions? Close so relatives, then, right? Right. So yeah, that right. So like for example, for we found out that Lloyd's a Kohen,
right?
So when I told him, he was very upset. He's like, "What? I can't go to my mother's funeral." I was like, "No, that's there are exceptions, right? Parents, you're okay." So that was okay. So now.
Now, so when you go today,
yeah,
and you go to the funeral home,
right? I will not go under any type of overhangs.
You'll be outside.
I'll be outside, yeah. So hopefully there's a speaker. Otherwise, it's like some kind of like a lot of times they have it. The really cool places where I've been in Brooklyn, they have a special room for the Kohanim. So you can go inside. Today, because of technology, you can actually see the funeral, like on and like listen and hear like a regular person. As opposed to, I mean, I've gone to the place in Hackensack. You stand outside. It's not fun in the winter. Yeah. Gets very cold. Okay. So now, this is what I wanted to get to. Because this is like, this is where it gets a little bit difficult. So let's do another. Okay. C2B?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, let's go from, okay. In the West.
Mm-hmm.
I'm jumping to that because of this. Okay. In the West, in Israel, Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel, they did not hear this explanation given by Rabba Bar Rav Shila. They raised the dilemma. Does the expression "and the sun sets" refer to the actual setting of the sun and it is purified, meaning the day either clears away, or perhaps it refers to, you know what, I'll just tell you outside. It's the idea of how there is a verse over here. If you go back up, you see Leviticus 22:6-7. If it's in the pattern
parenthesis. Oh, yes.
Just going
and
back
the sun
up
sets
there.
And it's pure.
So you see where it's italicized? One who touches it remains impure until evening. He should not eat of the consecrated items, and he must wash his flesh with water. And the sun sets and it is purified. So you see that line before where it says, so Leviticus 6:22-6:7. Mm-hmm. So the verse is very strange. And the sun sets and it is purified.
Mm-hmm.
What? Again, so the verse is, one who touches it remains impure until evening. He should not eat of the consecrated items, and he must wash his flesh with water. And the sun sets and it is purified. What is it is purified? What's that referring to?
Well, it's not saying he.
So it's very, it's ambiguous. And that's the problem. So then you see where it's dark and the sun sets and it is purified. They're going to try to say that the setting of his sun prevents him from partaking of chuma, but the atonement offering does not prevent him. It's the setting of the sun prevents him. Meaning what? When it sets, then he can. It's kind of bad. It's like a double neg, okay? So therefore, when it says, and the sun sets and it is purified, it's referring to the guy.
Okay. To me, It almost says it's not referring to the guy, but I'll okay. Say
in the Hebrew it says Ubah Hashemesh Vitaher, and it is Vitaher. It's purified. It's or I didn't say it's
Vitaher. The pronoun the it has a different.
It shouldn't say it's. It should say Vitaher, and purified.
Okay,
that's really Vitaher and purified.
Okay, because that makes a big difference.
Right, I know, and because it's of the ambiguity here. It leaves open, like, what does that mean? We walk away and we end up analyzing and saying it's talking about the person becomes purified, but it's the sun coming, which in this case means the sunset. But it's not just the sunset; it's that this is where it gets funny. Vitaher became purified. Is that talking about the guy? Or maybe it's talking about the day. How so? Sun sets. The day is still going. Vitaher became purified. Is the day itself ended? When does the day officially completely end? When the stars come out.
That's interesting.
Okay, so look at here.
So that's why they start now going to this.
Yeah, because, and that's what, okay, so here, look at this. In the West, okay, back there, they did not hear this explanation given by Rabbi Bar Rav Shila. They raised the dilemma, does the expression and the sun sets refer to the actual setting of the sun? And does, and it is purified, and it means the day clears away? Or perhaps refers to the setting of its light at sunset, in which case, what it is meaning is, and it is purified, it refers to the purification of the person, right? Vitaher. It's ambiguous. Does it mean the day or does it mean the person? Okay? That's what's going on here. Okay? In other words, in Eretz Yisrael, they attempted to clarify the halacha based on the biblical passage, but were unable to do so because it's ambiguous. Ultimately, they resolved the dilemma from a braita. It was taught in a braita that the time for the recitation of the evening Shema corresponds to the time when priests are permitted to eat of their truma, a sign for which is the emergence of the stars. From there, it's like almost like backwards. Mm-hmm. And therefore, derived from here, that the end and the sunset refers to the complete sunset, and the expression, and it is purified, means the day clears away, as the sages of Babylonia concluded. So therefore, when I look at the pasuk and it says, Ubah HaShemesh, the sun comes, Vitaher, became purified, is actually crazy. If I read this, I'd say, Vitaher means a person becomes, a day doesn't become. Mm-hmm. No. Vitaher is, Ubah HaShemesh, Vitaher is the day itself. And parenthetically, it makes you okay as well.
Right.
But it's referring to
the day ending,
which means what? Not just the sun setting, but the next step, which is that there are stars out.
Which then says, now you can say the Shema for the next day.
Well, that's, but no. Other stuff. Okay, wait.
And
okay.
When you can't do
that, Hold on. So this next thing, which is, this is where Gemara becomes like, okay, watch this. In our Mishnah, the Master said, the beginning of the time of the recitation of the evening Shema is from the time when the priests enter to partake of their truma. Okay?
From stars coming out.
Thank you. Yes.
You got to be careful how you say that.
No, okay. It's very different, right? Yes. Sunsetting is different than it. Yeah. And Kumar raises a contradiction to this opinion from a Braita that states that the time of the recitation of the evening Shema is what? From when a poor person enters to eat his bread with salt until he rises from his meal. When the heck is that?
Well, the Gemara is a contradiction from the right to the states at the time.
He has a new, is another, okay, so we, our mission said, when the Kohen can eat his truma after he got purified, which is what?
Stars.
Brita, which is written at the same time as the Mishnah, says, when can you say the Shema? For when the poor person comes to eat his bread with salt. When's that? I don't know. But that's when it is. Okay, so we have to figure out what that means. Okay, so he has a teaching that says the time is when a poor person comes to eat his bread. I don't know what that means right now. We're going to try to figure it out. Then Gemara begins its analysis by clarifying whether there is an actual contradiction here, or whether different expressions are being employed to describe the same time.
Which would actually then be more of a consolidation or confirmation of something.
Maybe.
Could be.
Good, yeah, good.
Or it could start World War III.
I don't know. We're not sure. The latter clause of the Braita, which established at the time for the recitation of the evening Shema, ends when a per person arises from his meal. Again. What do we say here? We're saying that just the latter clause of the Braita, which established that the time for the recitation of the evening Shema ends, you can only say it till when the poor person arises from his meal.
Certainly disagrees with the Mishnah. Is right. That where you are?
Yeah.
Okay.
What did we say in the Mishnah? We said in the Mishnah that we started about the beginning time, but there was also when can you say it till? There were three opinions. One was the first watch, whatever that means. There was midnight, and then there was up to dawn. Okay? This one's saying when the guy gets up from his meal. That's much earlier.
Yeah. Right? It says here, certainly disagrees with the Mishnah when a person rises from a meal, because a poor person isn't having a big meal, so a much shorter time frame too, maybe? Is that kind of what they mean?
Much shorter. Since the poor person clearly does not continue eating until the end of the first watch, this Braita certainly contradicts our Mishnah. Okay, fine. With regard to the first clause of the Braita, however, which establishes the beginning of the time for the recitation of the evening Shema, shall we say that it disagrees with our Mishnah? So when we, this idea of when the poor guy comes in to eat his bread, when is that? Is it in line with when the Kohen can eat his truma or not? Is it the same thing or is it different? Okay, we don't know yet. The Gemara immediately rejects this idea. No, the time when the poor person eats and the time when the priest is purified and permitted to partake of his truma are one and the same time. Says that's the same thing, which would be when the stars come out. Poor guy eats his bread at night, at the beginning of the night, which is the star thing. Okay? Notice I didn't say the end of the day, but we're into the night thing. Okay. The Gemara raises a contradiction from a Tosefta. Tosefta also is another corresponding. So you have Braitot, you have the Mishnah, you have Braitot, you have Toseftas. They're all coming from the same time period. That's important. We always look at hierarchy. Like the earlier it goes back, the more, more cloud it has. Okay. So the Gemara raises a contradiction from a Tosefta. From when does the one begin to recite Shema in the evening? From the time when people enter to eat their bread on Shabbos Eve, on Shabbat Eve. Another one. Okay. So what do we have so far? We have the time that the Kohen can eat his Truma. The time when a poor guy eats his bread during the week. And then we have this one about people coming to eat his bread on Shabbos Eve, on Friday night. This is the statement of Rabbi Meir. As they do in our Mishnah, the rabbis say, from the time when the priests are eligible to partake of their truma, a sign for which is the emergence of the stars. Okay, and although there is no explicit proof that the emergence of the stars is when one may begin to recite the evening Shema, there is an allusion in the book of Nehemiah to the fact that the emergence of the stars is generally considered the beginning of the night. As it is stated, with regard to the building of the walls of Jerusalem, and we perform the work, and half of them grasp their spears from dawn until the emergence of the stars. And it says that in the night they may be a guard to us and may labor in the day. From here, we ascertain that the day ends with the emergence of the stars. Because when he's talking about, so they're talking about the building of the temple, okay? It's the second temple period. Ezra and Nehemiah came back from Babylon, and it's in the process of discussing their building. It says, and we perform the work, and half of them grasp their spears from dawn until the emergence of the stars. Emergence of the stars. And it says that in the night, they may be a guard to us and may labor in the day.
I actually think this is pretty clear.
That it shows, okay.
That demarcation between day and night.
Okay, that's what they're saying. So now, as opposed to Rabbi Meir said something about when people eat their bread on Shabbos Eve. Okay, so now, even before analyzing these sources, the Gemara seeks to clarify a confusing element in the Tosefta. In their biblical proof, the rabbis do not suffice with one verse, but rather they say, and it says, and they cite an additional verse. What is added by this use of, and it says? It seems superfluous, as the entire proof appears in the first verse. So the Gemara answers, so I mean, like, it's just, this is a side point. The Gemara answers that the first verse was not sufficient, as if you say that the night begins when the sun sets, but the workers stayed late and arrived early. Due to the importance of their task, they worked even into the night in anticipation, which means that you could have learned from that. The takeaway was that night started at sunset. Therefore, come in here, as it stated, that in the night they may be guard to us and may labor in the day. The time between dawn and the emergence of the stars is explicitly referred to as day, proving that night begins with the emergence of the stars, which you said it's clear cut. That was like, okay. So now, in analyzing the three opinions regarding the beginning of the period of the recitation of the evening Shema, the Gemara begins with the supposition. It might enter your mind to say that the time when the poor person typically eats his meal and the time when ordinary people eat their Shabbos evening meal are one and the same time. Since in both cases, those eating would seek to begin their meals as early as possible, as for different reasons, they are unable to kindle additional lights to illuminate their meal. So he says, at first glance, it looks like people coming to eat are eating at the same time. Shabbos Eve, poor guy. And if you say that the time of the poor person's meal and the time of the priest is purified and permitted to partake of his truma are one and the same time, if you're going to say that everybody's saying the same thing, then the opinion of the rabbis is identical to that of Rav Meir, which then asks, what is the disagreement? Meaning, if you're going to tell me different opinions, they always seem to be different. Meaning, why state different opinions unless they're arguing with each other? That's usually the supposition, right? So rather, what we said previously must be rejected, and instead learn from this that there is a separate time for the poor person and a separate time for the priest. Because we originally assumed that when the poor guy's eating, it's the same time as the priest.
Right.
Not necessarily.
That can't.
It wouldn't make sense.
Yeah, because there wouldn't be a disagreement then.
However, this conclusion is based on the assumption that the time of the poor person and the time of the people are the same. That too can be rejected with the assertion that no, the time of the poor person and the priest are one and the same time, and the time of the poor person and the people are not the same. So that the person who's eating, the poor guy eating during the week, is different than the guy on Friday night. Accordingly, the opinion expressed by the Tana in our Braita is identical with the other Tanaim, and only Rav Meir disagrees with them. So that Rav Meir, who said that it had to do with the Friday night evening meal, he's the outlier. Okay? And is the time of the poor person and the priest the same, though? Is that a correct assumption to say that when the poor guy eats his bread is the same thing as when the priest can eat his truma? So the Gemara raises a contradiction to this approach from another Braita, in which other opinions regarding the time of the recitation of the evening Shema are cited. And from when does the one begin to recite the evening Shema? From the time when the day becomes sanctified on the eve of Shabbat. This is a statement of Rabbi Lazar, who established an earlier time for Shema. He's saying clearly earlier. That from the time when the day becomes sanctified on the eve of Shabbat. Okay? Rabbi Yehoshua, like our mission says, from the time when the priests are eligible to partake of the Truma. Okay? And then Rav Meir says the time of the recitation of the Shema begins before the priests were purified, from when the priests immersed themselves in order to partake of their Truma, which is during the day.
Right.
They went to the mikvah during the day.
Okay. It just didn't take place until the stars came out.
Okay. Rabbi Yehuda said to Rav Meir, how is it possible that the time of the recitation of the evening Shema corresponds to the time of the priest's immersion? Do the priests not immerse themselves during the day, so that with nightfall and the onset of a new day, they will be purified? If so, how can that time be called night? Meaning, how are you starting to give me this whole crazy thing about it? You're going to start, they could say Shema when they're going to the mikvah? They go during the mikvah and during the day. So he's like, I don't understand your Amir. Rav Hanina says that the time of the recitation of the evening Shema begins when the poor person enters to eat his bread with salt. Back to that one again.
Actually, that's a little different. This says when the poor person enters. Before, I don't think that was the terminology. Difference between enters and actually eats.
Okay, when a poor person enters to eat his bread. It says it here.
Is it both the same?
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Okay.
Okay, another one, because we were talking about him finishing.
Yeah, before. Okay. No, that's something else. When he got up, that was the end.
Okay,
so now Rav Achai, and some say Rav Aha, says, Vacha, from the time when most people enter to recline at their meal during the week. Okay, so what's coming out is all these statements must be that they're expressing different times. Okay, so the preceding was the text of the Braita. Returning to our question, if you say that the time of the poor person and the priest are one and the same time, then the opinion of Rav Hanina is identical to that of Rav Yehoshua. However, the fact that they are cited together indicates that they are not, in fact, the same. You see that
they're using them as contradictions.
Right, exactly. Rather, must one not conclude from this, the time for the poor person is separate, and the time of the priest is separate. Since no objection is raised, the Gemara concedes, indeed, conclude from this that that's the case, that they're different. Having established that the time of the poor person and that the priest are different, the Gemara seeks to determine which one is later then. The Gemara suggests it is reasonable to conclude that the time of the poor person is later. As if you say that the poor person is earlier, it would be impossible to establish a time earlier than the established above Rabbi Yeshua, unless we hold that the night begins with sunset, in which case the opinion of Hanina is identical to that of Rabbi Elazar. That one was taken already, right? That's basically the thing. So rather, must one not conclude from this that the poor person is later? The Gemara notes, indeed, conclude from this. So that seems to be a conclusion. It must be, we're saying, that we state all these different opinions. This one, that one already, that position was taken. It must be that he must be talking about a later period. Okay. So we learned that the master said in a Braita that the time of the recitation of the evening Shema according to a mayor begins with the time of the immersion of the priests. Regarding this, Rabbi Yehuda said to a mayor, does the priest not immerse themselves during the day? The Gemara notes that what Rabbi Yehuda said to a mayor seems correct. And how can a mayor respond? A mayor's response is connected to the fundamental dispute over when night begins. After sunset, a period begins, which is neither day nor night. The Tanaim disagree over the precise duration of the period known as twilight, Bein Hashmashot. Rabbi Yehuda holds that twilight extends a full hour after sunset. Rabbi Nechemya agrees in principle, though he disagrees over the specifics. Rabbi Yossi maintains that twilight is very brief. It actually was like, clarify means like an instant, and occurs immediately before the emergence of the stars, which marks the beginning of the night. Regarding Rav Meir's argument, Rav Yehuda asks that since the priests immerse themselves before twilight, they have a long wait until nightfall. Clearly, their immersion takes place while it is still day. So what are we going to answer? The Gemara answered that Rav Meir said to Rav Yehuda as follows, do you maintain that I am speaking of your definition of twilight? I am speaking of Rav Yossi's definition of twilight. As Rav Yossi said, twilight is like the blink of an eye. Night begins and day ends, and the time between them is so brief it is impossible to quantify. According to this opinion, the priests immerse themselves just before the emergence of the stars when it is already considered night. So thick. Okay? So the takeaway right now, because I'll stop here, is that you see that. Okay, so here's the.
You see that there's a lot of opinions in Judaism.
So what's going on here? So you see. One thing that's really interesting is that you're starting to see that it goes back to the first question. If the time period that one is allowed to say Shema starts from night, from the stars, why do you just say it that way? And the answer is because what we're really dancing around here is how do I understand uveshachtecha when I recline? Because what the Torah does in Shema, when it says, and you should say this when you recline and when you get up, that's not just a throwaway line, but uveshach b'cha becomes the definition of when exactly.
So many other things.
It's like, and it's showing that this is not a black and white slam dunk, you know, but rather there's a lot of how exactly, what do I pin my understanding of when a person says Shema? It's clearly not a black and white hard.
Well, and I would have to assume that this has an effect on many, 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 many other things. And when you do many, 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 many,
right.
Other
so, things. But the answer is that we end up with all this back and forth. We end up coming to the conclusion that you say the Shema really ideally should be said after the stars come out. people davened Marv earlier. So you're praying. That's prayer, right? That's a different deal. But really, according to this, you would have to, if you said, like Friday night, we really pray before the stars come out. The opinion says, okay, you should repeat Shema after the stars come out.
And do people do that?
Yeah. Yeah. So you have that. But you see that, again, difference of two different things.
Two different things.
But we end up asking, the halachic answer is, it's the stars. That's the definitive thing. And that's also Shabbos ends with the stars, right? That's even though the day ends, or day ends, right, when the sun sets, but Shabbos doesn't end until the stars come out. But Shabbos starts, we always add on as a buffer, but it would start, it starts when the sun sets, not when the stars come out.
And that, but that's really a buffer.
No, we do 18 minutes. We light candles 18 minutes before the sun sets.
Okay.
That's Tosefes. That's the buffer. So we started. That's why we say how long is Shabbos? It's 25 hours because we add on. It's another, or at least right. There's that added on an hour.
But is that only Shabbos or is that Yom Tov? Is it everything? I mean, when does Pesach begin?
Right, Yom Tov. Yom Tov. Although we say that the Seder really shouldn't start until after nightfall.
Right.
Right. So again, you see, right? So you start to see this. This again back to.